Welcome to Blue Water Studios in Orlando, Florida. This is the Let Me Ask 3 podcast with me, your host, Aaron Levin. So what does Let Me Ask 3 mean? Well, it means I can only ask my guests 3 questions. Because of this rule, I need to make each question count. Now, there are times that I might make a statement that prompts my guest to further elaborate on her answer, but I will only ask 3 questions. Most of my interviews for this podcast series will be with authors, scientists, journalists, people from the music industry, people from the sports world. Why these areas? Well, these are the people that I'm most interested in, and these are the topics that I'm most intrigued by. So let's get into this episode. Hey, Frank, won't you pack your bags and meet me tonight down at Liberty Hall? That is a line from a Bruce Springsteen song called This Hard Land. I am referencing that specific line from that particular song because it mentions a former music venue in Houston, Texas, named Liberty Hall. Today I'm going to interview Nikki Germain. In late 2022, Nikki's book titled Springsteen Liberty Hall was printed and published. This book, with Nikki's amazing photographs, captured Springsteen and his band during a 4-night stand at Liberty Hall in early March of 1974. In the spring of 2023, the first reviews for Nikki's book started coming out, and my gosh, the reviews were consistently excellent. I own the book, and it is absolutely gorgeous. The pictures, the binding, the copy, the quality, it is truly a piece of art. It is also a document of a moment in time. Bruce Springsteen wrote the foreword in Nikki's book, and Bruce described Nikki's photos as being from before. And I say the word before in big, bold letters. Before the band was called the E Street Band. Before the fame. Before the handlers. Before the buffers between the outside world and the band. Before John Landau was even involved in the production and management of the band, and way, way, way before any semblance of money made its way into anyone's pockets. So listeners, if you would, please close your eyes and transplant yourself back in time to March of 1974. It was only 4 days prior to Bruce's first show at Liberty Hall that Elvis Presley, the King, one of Springsteen's heroes, played to 88,000 people at the Houston Astrodome, a stadium then nicknamed the Eighth Wonder of the World. Well, in stark contrast, Liberty Hall, just 7 miles up the road from the Astrodome, had only 450 seats. That was maximum capacity. And the floors and the stage were made of wood. This was not a glamorous place. But from reading Nikki's book and looking at her photos, this place had personality to spare. Springsteen and his band were booked to play Liberty Hall on Friday, March 8th through Sunday, March 10th in 1974. In addition, Columbia Records, Bruce's label, booked a special show on Thursday, March 7th for invited press, radio folks, record label personnel, among others. There was a guy named Mike Pilot from the promotions department at Columbia Records. He was responsible for promoting artists on the Columbia record label in Texas and in some of the surrounding states. Pilot was super excited to have Springsteen come to Houston for these gigs. In fact, he asked a young photographer friend of his named Nikki Germain to come down to Liberty Hall and take pictures of the shows and of the band backstage, and even shoot photos of the band during the downtime between the shows. Germain had photographed various acts at Liberty Hall, but she had never met or even heard of Bruce Springsteen. Bruce had already released 2 albums by this point, his debut album titled Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey, as well as The Wild, The Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle. Although critically well-received, these albums did not sell very well. Columbia Records certainly had their concerns if Springsteen and his band could grow their popularity. More to the point, could these young men from New Jersey drive the volume of record sales necessary to remain on the record label? For some reason, these first two Springsteen albums sold a bit better in Texas than they did in many other states, adding to Mike Pilott's excitement surrounding these Liberty Hall gigs. The band had some unease about coming down to Texas. Racial tensions, particularly in the South, were always a concern. This band was a completely integrated band with three white musicians and three black musicians. There was, of course, Bruce Springsteen. Gary Talent was on bass, and by the way, he is still on bass 51 years later. Danny Federici was on organ. Clarence Clemons was on saxophone. David Sanchez was on piano. And Ernest Boom Carter was on drums. Now, Boom Carter was brand new to this band, having replaced the exiled Vinnie Mad Dog Lopez. Boom joined the band in February of 1974 and left the band with David Sanchez in August of 1974. Boom's tenure in the band was a blink of an eye, but a vital and powerful blink of the eye. Boom only got to record one song with Bruce and the band, and what a song it was, and what a song it remains today. It was the E Street Band's ultimate anthem, the song Born to Run, which of course would prove to be the title track to the third album. The unease of coming down to Houston quickly gave way as the band was met with many welcoming people. In fact, Liberty Hall itself was a progressive venue. How so? The venue held benefits for progressive political candidates. In September of 72, Liberty Hall hosted a benefit dinner for the Democratic senator from South Dakota, George McGovern, who was running for president of the United States. In February of 1973, Liberty Hall hosted the first annual National Women's Political Caucus with many prominent female leaders, including Gloria Steinem. Liberty Hall was feeling like a place that Bruce and the band could comfortably set up shop for a few days. So without further ado, let's bring our guest virtually into Blue Water Studios. It's time to ask Nikki Germain the three questions. Nikki, as I mentioned earlier, I need to make each question count, since I can only ask three of them. So as much elaboration as possible is encouraged. Feel free to go off on tangents, and of course, please have fun with it. Question number one, how would you describe your experience of spending a few days with Springsteen and the band in March 1974 at Liberty Hall? Please note your interactions with each member of the band.
Well, I didn't know any band members, but I felt very comfortable going to Liberty Hall. I was familiar with the venue. And I knew Mike was very excited about me meeting this band, and I figured I was in for a special experience. I didn't realize really how special it would be. When I first got there, I believe that was when I went to soundcheck and stayed with the band. No, actually, I don't think I was at a soundcheck. I take that back. I met the band backstage, and the thing I noticed first was how quiet it was. Typically, at Liberty Hall, it would be pretty robust backstage. A lot of activity. Maybe some groupies or maybe some drinking or maybe at times some drugs. There was none of that. It was a very, very serious environment compared to that. Bruce sat alone in a chair most of the time, or more isolated. He doesn't talk a lot when he's in getting ready for a show. What I found out later, this is, I think, pretty much a pattern with him. So I really had very little interaction with Bruce, except when I was taking his picture. And the band was not used to having anybody taking their picture. I found this out later. This was very new to them. Clarence was definitely the most open, the friendliest. He was also quite a bit older. He was about 31, I believe, at the time. And Bruce was 24, Gary was 24. They were all pretty young, but Clarence is a good bit older, had had more life experience. He was more self-confident and really at ease with just about anybody he met. So I spent more time talking to Clarence than anyone throughout the 4 days that I wound up going there. Danny was very friendly and somewhat flirtatious. David and Boone were very shy and reserved in a way, very reserved. They were, I would imagine, and looking back, understanding what I know now about their concerns about coming to play in Texas and being a half white black band, that maybe they were a little nervous. I later on got to have a chance to know them both a little better and got to know them as very fun and engaging and entertaining. But at that time, there was almost no conversation. Gary was really intriguing to me. I don't know what it was when I met him. He was the only band member who was married at the time. And, but I don't know, there was something. It was, I couldn't explain it, maybe because he was so, had a kind of an interesting quality about him. He was very reserved, but very soulful, something about him that really attracted me to him. Talking to the band backstage and photographing them backstage, there was a lot of media there at the time. People were giving Bruce t-shirts, and he was having some conversation with Mike Pilat. Mike Appel, Bruce's manager, was also there. So there was a little tension. I didn't understand it, but it was, you can see it in the photographs. There was a little tension, and it was just about the time that Bruce was going to be suing Mike for the rights to his music. And I don't know if there was conversation about that or discussion about it at that time, but the label was also considering dropping Bruce because the two first albums had not been successful. His recording career was on the line. He had to come up with his signature song that would save him. So there was some tension, I felt, back there. But that all went away. As soon as they hit the stage, they just exploded. It went from being this quiet backstage environment to just exploding on stage.
Question number two. Nikki, one of my favorite photographs in your book is of Gary Talent, the legendary bass player of the E Street Band, having a backstage conversation with Mike Appel. Now, Appel, Springsteen's manager at the time, was known for his wheeling and dealing ways. As I study the photo, it looks like Appel is telling Gary some grandiose story of future fame and fortune. Gary's arms are folded, and he has a rather stern look on his face, as if he was calling BS on whatever Mike Appel was spouting off. Realizing that this was a conversation that took place 51 years ago, one can only imagine what it was about. But with that said, what do you see and feel when looking at that image? And because this is an audio program, please describe the image in as much detail as possible.
Well, I don't think either one of us remember what they were talking about. I think the body language is what you're talking about. Gary's got his arms crossed, and he's kind of holding back a little bit. And, like, it does look like he's calling BS. You know, it kind of, but Gary doesn't suffer fools. You can't BS him. It just doesn't work. That would not work with him. And Danny in the background is interesting to me, because Danny's just kind of listening with his mouth open, like, what are you talking about? It's an interesting dynamic in that photograph. And of course, you can see, you know, some of that backstage environment around him as well. So it is one of my favorite photographs in the book, because it kind of tells a little bit of story. Yeah, I think that's what I would say about it. You know, I have no clue what they were talking about. I think one of the things to be aware of that is, when a photographer is shooting in a venue like this, or any venue, you're really just using your eyes. You're really not hearing You're not using that sense. You're not listening at the same time that you're seeing. You're focusing on the image through the camera, and you're trying to get the shot, and you're really not listening to what's around you. So I tell people, when you're at a concert, put your phone down. Don't take pictures. Experience the music. That's why you're there. Because if you're doing that, you're not listening. You're not hearing the whole thing. There's no way you can do both.
Question number three. Nikki, I am certain that people do not know the full story of how these photographs became a thread that has woven itself through much of your adult life. So let's share this amazing story with the audience. Specifically, how did that photo assignment in 1974 at Liberty Hall lead to where you are now in 2025, living in Nashville with Gary Talent?
Well, that is a long thread. I'll try to make it sense and not make it too long an answer. But so I met the band in March of 74. I took the photographs, a lot of them, and I had worked for a commercial photographer at the time, so I had access to the studio. I could develop the film. I could do all that. And interestingly enough, Mike Pilot never used the photographs for anything. And but about the same time that I took these photographs, I also got my first assignment to shoot the Smothers Brothers for Rolling Stone. I had met the art director for Rolling Stone, and he gave me this assignment. And then come September of the same year, 74, the band came back to Houston, and Rolling Stone was going to do an article, full page in the magazine, which came out in September, which was, I believe, the same month they would play at the music hall. And so Mike Salisbury, the art director, called me and asked me, he said, "Don't you have photographs of Bruce Springsteen?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "I'd like to use one of those for this article." And I said, "Sure." And so I sent him the picture of Bruce backstage with his shirt off, holding a Coke in his hand, and they paid me $50. That was the only picture that was published. And they gave me a credit, you know, and it was very nice. Gary called me up when they came back to town, invited me to come to the show at the music hall, and I did, but I didn't take my camera because I wanted to hear the show and I wanted to experience it. And then we went on our merry way, and I moved to San Francisco, and the next time I heard from Gary, and for whatever reason, we had this connection, we were just friends, but he called me up, and he was in San Francisco. First of all, I had no idea how he found me because this was before cell phones and all that, you know, and he called me on the apartment phone, and I said, "How in the world did you find me?" And he said, "Well, you know, I went to Houston, I looked you up, but found out you had moved to San Francisco, and your old boss told me how to get in touch with you." So he called me and asked me if I wanted to come to the show at the Fillmore, and I said, this was probably, I think it was around 77 or 78. I said, I can't make it. So I didn't see him. Okay. Then a few years went by, and now the band is a new iteration. I wasn't really following them. I was busy doing a lot of other things. I just moved to the Bay Area and had a new life. So the band came, I think it was 1984, 85, band came to the Oakland Coliseum, and now Nils Lofgren was playing with them, and Patti was playing with them, and they're playing these huge venues, and I was sort of thinking, well, it might be kind of fun to go see the band. I didn't have tickets, but I was pretty resourceful, so I called Bill Graham's office, and I said, "Is there any chance I can get a message to Gary Talent?" And they said, sure. So I gave them my number. They called me back. They said, "There are going to be two tickets for you and two backstage passes, and we'll call." And I took my daughter, and we got these great seats sitting right next to a speaker, which I think blew out one of my ears. I was just,
oh my God.
And the show, of course, was not a shorter set like the Liberty Hall sets. It was like this 3-hour show or whatever it was. And it was school, it was a school night. And I'm thinking, when is this ever going to be over? But I got to get her back. I got to get her back home. But we stayed to the end of the show. And then after the show, I briefly met Gary backstage with his second wife and said hello, goodbye, really briefly, and then went back home. Decade went by, probably more than 2 decades. Well, I know it was more than 2 decades. And it was New Year's Day in 2011. I got this phone call from Whitefish, Montana, and I was a real estate agent now in Sonoma, California, and working all the time. And I thought, I'm not working on New Year's Day. I'm not picking up the phone. But then when I got the voicemail message, I went, what in the world? And probably said something a little stronger than that. But anyway, it was a message from Gary. And so anyway, I called him back and I said, oh my God, how did you find me? And he said, oh, you know, the internet. Well, what had happened was, this is fascinating. Bill Whitbeck, who was a 17-year-old kid in Texas at the time, had been at one of the shows at Liberty Hall. And he and his buddy had just fallen in love with the music, and he loved Gary's bass playing, and he decided to become a bass player. A very good one and very successful. He is Robert Earl Keen's bass player today. And Bill was writing an article about Gary and his bass playing at Liberty Hall for Bass Magazine, and he wanted to know if he had any pictures. And Gary says, no, but I know someone who does. So isn't that wild? So
amazing.
Gary called me, Gary called, left a message. I called him back. We had a lovely conversation, and he said, do you by any chance have those photographs? I said, sure. They're here somewhere. Let me look. You can have whatever you need. And then as I went back and looked through what I had, and I found some color photographs. I sent them off to him right away. And then I said, you know, I have about 5 rolls of Tri-X here, and let me have it scanned and put it on a CD. This is how you had to do it back then. And let me know what you think. So I did. And when he got them, he called me and he said, these are incredible. He said, you've got to do something with these. He said, you've got to do like a limited edition portfolio. And I'm thinking, how does he know what that is? So I said, great idea. However, I don't have time for this. I was just working all the time, every day. Anybody who knew me back in Sonoma could tell you that all I did was work. So anyway, I think about a year and a half went by, and I was at a real estate conference in New Orleans, and they were playing the jazz festival. And that was the first time I had seen Gary in almost 2.5 decades and something like that.
Amazing. Yeah.
25 years or so. So it was a wonderful connection. And then I didn't. And then 2 years later, saw him again at jazz festival. And more than 4 years passed, and I'm just jumping forward here. And on my birthday in 2018, I got an email wishing me happy birthday. And it was weird. It came from some weird email address that I didn't recognize, and I thought it might be some phishing scam. And then I noticed that Gary started following me on Twitter, and I went, oh, maybe it was him. So I called his sister, and she said, yeah, that's him. He had to change his email and all that, but he's got his phone number is the same. So I sent him a text message, and he said, can we catch up sometime? And I said, sure. So he said, how about this afternoon? And I went, hey. We talked for 4.5 hours. Now, this is the guy that doesn't talk much.
Yeah.
So clearly there was this connection, and long story short, we had both been married 3 times. He was getting a divorce. He had been living in a rental that he had moved into and in Nashville. He was back in Nashville, and I was in Sonoma. I was getting ready to retire, and I decided I was going to move to New Orleans. Where I had lots of friends, and I thought, I'm going to be single the rest of my life, you know, I'm going to do it there. what fun could that be? I mean, just so that was my plan. And at any rate, we talked for like 3 months. And when you get a chance to talk to somebody for 3 months and you're not actually together, you really get to know someone. It's a great way to get to know somebody. And then finally he said, I just got to see you. And he eventually came out to California. And after the first couple of days, he just looked at me and he said, who knew this could be so easy? And amazing. We started a long distance relationship. And eventually he said, do you think you would consider moving to Nashville instead of New Orleans? And I said, well, that depends. What do you mean by that? So we've been a couple since we first saw each other, I guess, in September of 2018. Well, timing is everything. And what really, everything started to just fall into place. Once I got to Nashville, in fact, it was during COVID, one day Gary said, do you mind if I send some of these pictures to Bruce? And I just started to brace myself at that point because I thought, oh, here we go. Something's going to happen. And so he sent some pictures to Bruce, and Bruce said, well, who took these? So I texted Bruce and Gary's phone, and I said, well, I took these pictures, you know. And long story short, we talked on the phone. I said, I'm thinking about doing a book, but I would never do it without your blessing. And he said, just tell me what I can do to help. And I said, well, we know you can write. So that's how it came to be that he ultimately did the foreword, but he had not seen the photographs in his hand. They had not gotten a chance, but when he was doing the Broadway show, we met him backstage before one of the shows, and he got a chance to really see them. And he goes, wow. He said he was just really blown away. It was obviously a time in his career that was really nostalgic, really important to him, and he just didn't have anything from that. And so he fell in love with the images. And he's been so supportive of the book. And the other thing that happened was I had a friend in Napa who had published her own book of photographs with Yolanda Cuomo. And turns out she's in Weehawken, New Jersey. And when I reached out to her, she went nuts when I said Springsteen because she's in New Jersey. She has beautiful books, but she's also the book designer for Pete Souza. So for those of you who don't know, he was Obama's official photographer. He's an incredible photographer and a wonderful guy. And I met him on Zoom with Yolanda during COVID, and we were on Zoom for like 2 hours. He wanted to meet me, and we talked about, he's also a Springsteen fan, and so he was very helpful. He was very generous with information. And then it just kept snowballing from that point on. There, Bob Santelli, who is the director of the Bruce Springsteen Archives, had came here to the house during COVID. He and Gary met on the back porch. They talked about putting a show together when they thought COVID restrictions were going to be lifted, putting something together in Asbury Park. And when they got through talking, Bob had mentioned several times about this period of time in the early days where his favorite time with the band. And I said, he had known them all this time and had written for Crawdaddy and Rolling Stone and published many books on rock and roll. He curated the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Music Experience in Seattle for Paul Allen. All the Grammy exhibitions and wonderful writer. And I said, would you like to, well, anyway, I asked him, would you like to see some photographs? And he said, do you have some? And I said, yes. So I showed him. He said, Nikki, these are incredible. What can I do to help? And I said, well, I need a writer, you know? And so he wrote this about 4,000 word piece for the book. Gary wrote his memory of that time. And I wrote a little bit, but I'm not a writer. Really not a writer, but I wrote a little bit about what I remember. And so everything just kind of fell into place. And the whole process of putting the book together was one of the best experiences of my life. It was like a dream come true. I wanted it to be not just a book of rock and roll photographs, but a book more like a presentation of a book of art. That was my intention, and I'm so proud of it and so grateful to the people that helped me through this. There's a whole list of them, but primarily Yolanda, Bob, Bruce, Gary, Chuck Kelton, who printed these gorgeous black and white images, and Rocky Kenworthy in Asheville, North Carolina, who had this studio there. He printed all the color for me. It was Rocky who really sort of stopped the process in the beginning when he said, Nikki, you really need a writer. You need this. These are all the things you need. And he really helped me focus on what I needed to do and made me realize I couldn't do anything until I was no longer working as a real estate agent. You know, I had to retire from that before I could do anything like this. So it's been since early 23. I've been on a tour with Gary for the international tour. I've been to almost all the shows. We're going back this summer. I've had some wonderful book signings in Europe and in the U.S. And there's a few more books left. And I'm looking forward to going back to Europe, but I think we're all kind of getting already nostalgic about what's going to happen when the tour's over, which will be July 3rd. It'll be over July 3rd.
Well, I you know, I agree 100%. It is a piece of art. It is, you know, sometimes you order things and, you know, I read great reviews about the book. When I received it, I expected something special because, again, I had read the reviews, but it exceeded my expectations because I keep on referencing that, you know, at that moment in time. Again, in 1974, I was a 3-year-old kid, so I sound like I can really relate to 1974, but I can certainly relate to this point in the history of Bruce and the band here. And it really puts you in that spot so well. I think it accomplished a lot. I'll put it that way.
Thank you. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very, very grateful to everyone who helped me make it happen. And it's not something, I've never published a book before. I probably will never do another, but I guess you never say never. I have an idea about doing something for this last week of the tour, but it's kind of more personal to the band and the crew. But it's been kind of like a dream come true, really. I think I've always wanted to do something like this, but I never thought it would be this. In fact, after I took the photographs at Liberty Hall, I said, who's ever going to want these?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, who knew? We were on the plane going to one city, the next somewhere in Europe, and Bruce had gotten the medal of freedom, I believe it was, and I congratulated him, and then I looked at him again, and I said, who knew? And he said, right? I mean, you look at him like, looking like the scraggly jeans, and skinny little guy on stage in 1974, and here he is now, bigger than ever, and every year he gets more and more. He's legend, and he's probably the biggest name we have in rock and roll right now, the most influential in every respect. And traveling with Bruce and the band has been an experience of a lifetime. I have never been in an environment where I've met such a cohesive, wonderful group of people who are so nice and so kind and so considerate to one another. And it's such a top level professional organization, which harkens back to what I was feeling when I first met the band backstage at Liberty Hall. They were serious. They were serious about what they were doing. And there's a reason why this band has stayed together as long as it has.
Nikki, I can't thank you enough for the generosity of your time and your amazing insights today. Nikki's book is still available. There are not many units remaining of this limited edition masterpiece, so my recommendation, don't hesitate. In the United States, you can purchase the book at springsteenlibertyhall.com. Again, that is Springsteen, libertyhall.com. If you're interested in an autograph copy, email Nikki at info@springsteenlibertyhall.com. Again, you can email Nikki Germain at info@springsteenlibertyhall.com. And for the podcast listeners in Europe, please contact Nikki at info@springsteenlibertyhall.com to purchase a copy. Please continue to follow this podcast. I look forward to sharing many more interesting episodes of the Let Me Ask 3 podcast with you.